Out of sight, out of mind. We don't always see the consequences of our actions,
but here's an opportunity to listen.
I'm your host, Hina Singh. Journey with me across continents to listen to stories, ideas, and opinions from different cities around the world. Hear local accounts of global environmental issues and the role of government, technology, culture, and geographic location in shaping our relationships with the environment in different corners of the world. This is the Happy Earth Day podcast. Hey guys, Hina here. It's August 4th, 2018. Happy Earth Day. Today I was joined by my cousin and travel companion Amna Majeed and interviewing Indian music composer Ricky Cage at his home in Bangalore, India. Ricky is a Grammy Award winner and US Billboard number one artist. He uses the language of music to inspire policymakers and communities to make sustainable changes. Ricky is most well known for his recent album, Shanti Samsara, which was launched by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and French President Hollande at the UN COP21 Climate Change Conference in 2015. The album is a compilation of works with over 500 musicians in over 40 countries. The album touches on narratives including the human-elephant conflict, the island nation of Kiribati going underwater, the biodiversity of the Maldives, and many more. We will be discussing these themes as well as the role of music in implementing policy and behavioral change at the local and federal level. I hope you enjoy.
So there are various, every song is about a different, a different topic. Like a song could be about celebrating biodiversity. Like for example, we've got songs in the album which is celebrating biodiversity of the world. We've got some songs which are talking about coexistence and from an ancient perspective. Because if you look at coexistence as a word, right now the only thing that comes to our mind when we think about the word coexistence is coexistence between different parts of the human race. You know, between Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Jains, Jews, Christians, that kind of stuff. But if you look at any ancient tradition anywhere in the world, whether it's pagan culture, whether it's Sanskrit, whether it is Mandinka, whether it is Zulu, whether it is Mandarin, Mayan, whatever, coexistence has always meant living in absolute peace and harmony with every single entity in this universe, whether it is living or not living. And that's key to survival of the human race, you know, coexistence with resources, with so-called resources, coexistence with animals, coexistence with the wildlife in the forests and things like that. So that's what I try to bring about through my music. I've taken all these ancient verses and I've put them to music, and I've gotten authentic musicians and singers who have been singing these particular verses and these particular scriptures for generations and generations to actually, you know, perform this music in the album. So this sort of touches people on a more emotional level, yeah. Especially when we perform it live. And then, of course, one particular project which was very close to my heart is the South Pacific Island Nations. So there's a South Pacific Island Nation known as Kiribati, which is a country which is going to be the first country to go completely underwater due to climate change. And to tell you how much of time they have, in the next 30 years, none of the 21 islands that form that country are going to be inhabitable. And it's irreversible. And in the next 60 to 70 years, the tallest point in any of the islands is going to be completely underwater. And I stress on the fact that this is irreversible right now, irrespective of what changes the world makes. So I went to this island country. I spent 2 weeks over there, spent a lot of time with the president, and I made music with their president and with their population. And that's also part of the album. It's the first song on the album where we showcase. And if you go onto YouTube, you'll see the video of this particular song, which is basically showcasing the people over there, showcasing the children of that island, because these children will not have the opportunity to grow old in their own country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so just to showcase that, and of course, climate change is not of their making, because this country lives within nature. They don't take more than they can give back. They do not have any carbon emissions. They have zero industrialization. But they are low-lying atoll islands, so they are suffering the consequences of our actions. So this particular song is to showcase that, you know, it's a beautiful country that's going to go underwater for no fault of their own. They are suffering the consequences of our actions. So climate change is real and there are victims of climate change right now.
Right. No, I read about that. Yeah. I thought that was so interesting. I think it's so fascinating that you're able to kind of take like this issue, like a story even, and make it into a song. Can you maybe describe how you're able to do that? Like, so to like a listener, they're able to kind of understand that this is the message that you're putting across, and that they maybe like internalize it and maybe feel the need to take action.
So when it comes to music itself, music is an extremely powerful language, not just for communicating a message, but for implanting that message deep into the consciousness of a listener. So it's a very, very powerful medium, very powerful tool. And if you look at music in general, especially in countries like India and America, the thing is that music is always created based on current trends. It's always created based on what somebody pays the musician to create. So it's always commissioned music, and it's music which has been created keeping in mind the end listener. Whereas music at the end of the day is an art form. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be treated as an art form, and it needs to be an extension of the beliefs and personality of a musician. And if a musician is creating music or any art form, whether it's fine arts, whether it's painting or whatever, if you're creating art based on your own philosophies, based on your own beliefs, and based on what you think strongly about, then you know it becomes very easy to communicate a message, and then you don't experience things like writer's block or creative block or anything like that, because there are no deadlines. You know, you're just creating music whenever you are inspired to create it. So that's exactly what I have done with my life. You know, after the meeting with our Prime Minister, that I decided to only create music on things that I feel powerful about, feel strongly about, which is basically the environment.
So how much of that do you think, say, a musician's passion, the way you're describing, is able to drive, say, something like policy change, for instance?
In a big way.
We're speaking of immediate actions.
Correct.
So you mentioned that you just performed in Canada. So, for instance, the biggest, from the latest news, is the Trans Mountain pipeline that the Trudeau government has decided to put from Calgary to Alberta. Costs about $315 million and all. And they're saying that Trudeau is at the risk of severing his ties with environmental groups because of that.
But the fact is this, that when it comes to politics, one has to understand, at least from my perspective, that protest is of no use at all. I do not believe that protest has got any use, simply because you have to work with governments in order to change their policies, because at the end of the day, democracy is the best form of governance that we have right now. But democracy itself has got a huge amount of problems. The biggest problem being that a government has to be re-elected every 4 to 5 years. And so every single politician ends up fighting an election for their entire life, you know, in the sense that, and how do they, how you have to look at it from their perspective, that how do they get re-elected by long-term plans? The only way they can get re-elected is basically by short-term plans, and short-term plans in today's world means short-term policies through economics. That's the only way that they can get re-elected. So what we need to do is that we need to make the public and the general population itself more and more environmentally conscious, such that these people will get votes for doing what is the right thing. Because at the end of the day, whichever government, whether it is Canada, whether it's India, whether it is USA, whether it is Japan or whatever, or any of the Polynesian countries or whatever, every single government is a follower. They are not a leader. We don't have leaders anymore in this world. And we have to fully acknowledge that we do not have leader. The era of leadership is completely gone. The way that we have, what we have is basically we are followers. They look at what popular public opinion is, and basically they base their policies completely on that. So we have to understand that either we need to elect strong leaders, and there are no leaders left in this world, or we have to ensure that we have an enough critical mass such that the governments get enough votes for doing the right thing. Because if we promise the right amount of votes to the government for actually stopping a pipeline, or for, you know, or for changing policy, or making or bringing in policy for conservation, which is amazing for our wildlife or for our forest, we have to. I don't see why a government will not take those decisions, because at the end of the day, all of them just want to be in power. So that is the way it is, and that's what my motive is, that, you know, trying to create a society which is more environmentally conscious, such that governments will do the right thing. At the end of the day, all these guys want is to get re-elected, and what we need to do is that we need to convince them that they will get re-elected for doing the right thing.
So you're talking about how, so mostly your music is then to communicate to the common person so that they take the action.
And to leaders. And because leaders also can take small steps. Like, for example, when it comes to, you know, the immediate threat in India, when it comes to the environment, is basically plastics. So that's something that, you know, that I've been pretty successful through my music to actually, and through my concerts, to leaders, you know, to actually get, to make leaders and policymakers understand, and even bureaucrats understand that, you know, that there are alternatives to using plastics, and sometimes it's important to ban plastics first and then figure out, you know, what the immediate alternatives are to plastics and to various other things, like, you know, to human elephant conflict. I've been doing a lot of work with regard to that, and I've been performing this music to policymakers and change makers so that they understand that, you know, the fragmentation of the habitat is extremely dangerous to the populations of these animals and things like that. So that's the idea, you know. The idea is to work with so-called leaders and with politicians, to work with policymakers, so that we get whatever successes that we can through the emotional language of music, and that's my job. But at the same time, work with the ground up approach, so that we work with creating enough environmental consciousness and create a critical mass, so that people understand that we need to elect the right leaders, and long-term solutions are also important along with short-term solutions and short-term gratification through economics.
Yeah, okay. And could you maybe describe the types of emotions that you try to elicit with your music? Like, you try to have people feel, and like maybe the way that you do that, like whether it's through key or instrument, or even like, I know you have like 500 musicians that worked on this album, so maybe like cultural kind of ideas going into this.
No, true. See, as I mentioned, music is a very powerful language for communication. At the same time, music is called a universal language, and it's a cliche to call it a universal language, but it's absolutely true. Like, for example, while making Shanti Samsara, there was this Algerian violin player who I'm a huge fan of, and I really wanted to collaborate with this guy. And so I went to Algeria, and I sat with him, and it was a very frustrating experience, because I kept trying to communicate what I wanted, and, you know, to this musician, and I was unable to do that because he was only Arabic. That's the only language which he spoke. And for me, it was English and bits of Hindi that I speak. So I just could not communicate with him, and even sign language was not working, because the cultures are so different that, you know, that even our reference points were different. So, you know, so nothing was actually working, and I tried that for about a couple of hours, and, you know, and it was, as I mentioned, just a frustrating experience. Then I just went on the piano and started playing my music, and then he just opened up his violin case and he pulled out his violin and he started playing along with me, and then we had like almost a 3.5 hour session where, you know, we were just, you know, we're throwing pieces of music at each other, and, like, you know, and we were giving an equal emotional response to each other's music, you know. And there, you know, we were sort of like, we overcame obstacles of notes and scales and things like that, and even political backgrounds and language barriers, and we were just communicating through music, and that was all that was required. And then we just recorded that session, and that's what's ended up on the album. So that is the beauty of collaboration. That's the beauty of music, that, you know, that the emotion actually can be translated beautifully, and people can understand what it is. And coming back to your question, like, there was this one song in the album called Festival Divine. Mm-hmm. So that particular song was a song that I created immediately after I went diving in the Maldives, you know. So I went diving in the Maldives. I saw this beautiful scape of creatures underwater, and it was almost like a completely different planet. It was hugely undiscovered and unexplored, and I felt the need that, you know, that this needs to be protected, you know, in the sense that, especially when it comes to plastic pollution, when it comes to polluting the oceans and things like that, we need to protect these animals because it's largely untouched, and hopefully it should remain that way. So that's why. So I made this song called Festival Divine. I collaborated with a New York musician, a guy called Lonnie Park, again a Grammy nominated musician, brilliant singer songwriter. So both of us collaborated with each other. Then we collaborated with another musician from Azerbaijan, a lady called Ilhama Gasimova. She's a brilliant traditional singer from Azerbaijan. And then we needed a little bit more of a twist to it, because to get the emotion across, then we collaborated with a Peruvian guitar player, a guy called Ciro Hurtado. So it was this amazing thing of, like, you know, India with USA, with Peru, with Azerbaijan, and we came up with this composition, which really represents, you know, and it's called Festival Divine, because when I think of colors, the only thing that comes to my mind is basically Indian festivals, you know, like Holi and things like that. And I felt that, you know, that the underwater world was pretty much representative of a festival which was far more colorful than any Indian festival, you know, and far more pristine, far more beautiful. So that's why I called it Festival Divine. So that's well. And then there was another song called Love Divine, which also is a song which I wrote for the human elephant conflict.
Right.
So that I collaborated with a singer-songwriter from Bangalore itself, a lady called Alexis D'Souza. Okay. So what we did was that we had a lot of conversation as to what the song, what the lyrics should be about, how we should actually describe this. Because one of the biggest problems of writing lyrics for a song is that you are marrying the music, because you create this music which is so emotional, and you create this music which is emotionally representative and also open to interpretation, you know. But then as soon as you put lyrics to a song, then you're basically spoon-feeding an audience as to what the song is about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically you're immediately giving a face to it. It's just the same way that, you know, that people feel that the movie never lives up to a book. Because like, let's say a book like Harry Potter, let's say, it's so visually evocative, the book. And no matter how well you make a movie, it does not live up to the book, simply because the book makes you, is so visually evocative, and you imagine all these different characters. And you know, and you always feel cheated when the movie comes out, because you're spoon-feeding an audience as to what the appearance of this is. So it's the same with lyrics, I always feel, because lyrics become the face of a song, and it's always difficult. So that's why I like my lyrics to be a little more obscure. So that you're not, if it's about the elephants, you're not mentioning the word elephant in it,
right,
but you're mentioning the emotion behind it.
Right.
So what I did was that through that song, what Alexis did, the person who wrote the lyrics, was that she brought about in the lyrics that that, you know, that whatever you do to nature is what is harm that you're causing to yourself. So the lyrics sort of goes about like, you know, it talks about a mirror, you know, like in the sense that that nature is but a reflection of the self,
mm-hmm.
and the environment is a reflection of the self, and whatever harm you cause the environment, whatever harm you cause nature, is harm that you're causing to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the entire song is about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a reflection of yourself, and it's about understanding that that, you know, that all of us are part of this one big whole. And you know, and we have to understand that, like, you know, that that every piece of damage that we create is affecting all of us equally, and every piece of goodness that we create is affecting all of us equally.
Wow, that's so cool. I'm wondering, like, do you think that, have you ever talked with your listeners to see if that's their interpretation when they listen to it? Because I know, like, when I've heard it, like, yeah, at first I was like, wow, this is so interesting. And then when I read that, it's, oh, wow, this is about the human elephant conflict. It's not always apparent, but
yeah.
It's, so how do you make sure that, like you're saying, you're trying to persuade people to, like, learn more about these issues so that they can vote and take action. So how do you ensure that they are getting the message that you want them to?
See, there are two ways of messaging. One is basically the regular advertising messaging, where, like, you know, you talk about human elephant conflict, you make a poster, you put an elephant there,
right?
You put an elephant in chains, and you write, like, you know, that this is what you should be doing. So that is one way. Now, the thing is that this one's more immediate in the response, because you know exactly what it's about. So it's more immediate. But at the same time, I believe that it's more volatile. Because whenever your communication is more immediate, then what happens is that as fast as it enters your brain, it leaves your brain.
Okay.
And that's the same thing with pop music in general. Because nowadays, if you look at pop music does not have a long shelf life. Because the way it has been created is that on one listening, you immediately get the tune in your head, you get the melody in your head, and it affects sales, and it affects your ability to constantly purchase this kind of music and stream this kind of music. But then at the same time, within 3 or 4 months, it's completely forgotten.
Right.
It's absolutely completely forgotten, this music. So for me, I'm of the belief that the second way of communication is more important. The second way of communication is a little more obscure, and at the same time it draws you in because you do not understand fully what it is about. Mm-hmm. But then once it hits you, and once, like for example, a band that I admire is Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd, you do not know exactly what every song is about. Mm-hmm. It's always open to interpretation, but when it hits you, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with a lot of movies, like you know that they are in multiple layers. Like for example, a movie like Avatar. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's one of the best movies ever made because on the surface, it's a blockbuster. Like in the sense that about a guy who is a human and like, you know, and he's supposed to fight against his aliens, then he loves the alien life and then he joins them and then he fights against the humans. So this is a story that's been told many times, like, you know, like for example, it's been told with Dances with the Wolves, the same story. It's been told with The Last Samurai, with Tom Cruise, where, you know, with the samurai, the same thing happens. But at the same time, there's a layer underneath when you watch the film multiple times, mm-hmm. where you realize that this is a tribe, which is an ancient tribe, which you know lives in absolute coexistence with the environment, and it's told in the movie. Have you seen the movie?
Yes.
Yeah. So and it's told in the movie multiple times that the Navi tribe is a much older tribe than the humans, you know. And but their idea of development was in a completely different direction. Our idea of development was deforestation, concretization, buildings, that kind of a thing.
Right.
You know, damaging the environment and making life better for humans. Whereas their definition of the Navi tribe of development was living as much in coexistence with the environment, so much so that, like, you know, that nature and their particular race is basically one and the same. So that was a beautiful, beautiful example of how, like, you know, a piece of art has got multiple layers,
yeah.
where somebody can immediately enjoy something and not think too much about it. But then a person who wants a deeper meaning of that particular piece of art can get a deeper meaning and get a better understanding of conservation and all of that stuff through that piece of art. So that's how I strive to make my music. That it should not be immediate stuff. Like if it's a human elephant conflict, it should not be like an advertising jingle that, you know,
yeah.
that, you know, let's not imprison the elephants. Like, you know, it should not be direct marketing in terms of lyrics. It needs to be more obscure. And then hopefully people get it, like, you know, on multiple listenings and, you know, you draw them in. Because once you draw them in and once they understand, then you've got them, you know,
mm-hmm.
you've converted them.
I think it's fascinating that subtlety can be utilized to create a more effective way of communicating a message regarding important issues like global warming and plastic waste. I think that then brings up the question of how people in power listen to music and how they appreciate art, since they are part of the album's target audience. It's just something definitely to think about. We then asked Ricky about any work he does with environmental organizations in his free time.
Another project which is very close to my heart is that when you talk about environmental consciousness and you talk about long-term approach, as we were discussing about the ground-up approach, you need to start with children. And I've acknowledged this quite a while back that I need to target children somehow and I need to get children more and more involved. So what I did for the last 2 years, I've been working on this project where I wrote these 27 songs which are based on the 17 Sustainable Development Goals written by the United Nations. So every song is about a different topic. A song is about poverty, because poverty is key to elevation of poverty and hunger is basically key to conservation, you know. And so all these particular social causes are pretty much interlinked. So I wrote these songs about various social causes and social impact causes, about conservation, about things like, just to tell you, a song about the rhinoceros, you got a song about rainwater harvesting, a song teaching children about what carbon footprint is and things like that. And then all these songs are aimed at children from the first grade to eighth grade. And after recording these songs, I've put all the songs into public domain. So basically there's no royalty, there's no copyright, there's no commercialization whatsoever. Anybody can use these songs for any purposes. So the good news is that Macmillan Publishers, who are the top publishers for English textbooks across India, so they, for the academic year of 2019, they're going to be putting these songs into more than a million textbooks for children. So it's going to become part of the curriculum.
Oh, that's great.
And each, so the lyrics are going to be in the textbooks. There's going to be a QR code where parents can, you know, scan the QR code and all the songs get downloaded onto their phone. So basically bringing back rhyme into education, songs that you learned during your childhood or songs that you remember till the day you die. The models that you learn through those songs are models that stick with you. So all these principles have been put into these particular songs. And these songs are the songs which have an immediate effect where the minute you listen to it, it basically sticks in your head. So that's the idea. Because the children it works. So that is the idea. So so this is a project which is pretty close to my heart, and also we are translating it. We've already translated the songs into Kannada and into Hindi.
So there are lyrics in these songs then?
Yeah, it's completely lyrical. It's completely lyrical.
Okay. Okay.
It's very immediate. So this is basically the other approach that I talked about, where it's more immediate.
Okay.
It's more because that's what we need to, that's how we can target children audiences, simply because we are basically replacing the nursery rhymes that they are listening to right now with these basically.
Okay.
We are replacing the children's rhymes with these particular songs.
Okay.
Oh, so this would go into the NCERT, ICSE kind of...
Exactly. So it's already in the ICSE and CBSE books that Macmillan is publishing. So for English, now what we're doing is that we are targeting SSLC and the various state boards. So that's where we finished the translations and the recordings in Kannada and Hindi. So Hindi, we are talking with the Delhi government to get this put into at least 2 million textbooks in the Delhi NCR region. And same thing with the Karnataka government. Together, Kannada versions put into about 1.5 million textbooks in Karnataka. So basically, this will help in bringing in a whole new generation of children who, you know, who understand, you know, what a carbon footprint is, who understand conservation, who understand understand rainwater harvesting from such a young age, who understand plastic pollution and all that stuff, and they probably shame their parents into action.
Ricky's work on the sustainability jingles aimed towards young children, now being published in textbooks and taught as nursery rhymes in schools, is super exciting and far-reaching in the ability to influence the next generation to develop greater environmental awareness. Here are a few snippets from the series, which is called My Earth Songs. You can find it on YouTube and other music platforms online.
So how many plastic bags did you use in the last week? Do you know that every scrap of plastic you've ever used still exists somewhere on the planet? It's time to be responsible and clean up our planet. So join us in the plastic war. There's a bag not going under, floating on the water. Just won't sink to the bottom of the lake. Sitting on the surface, it has no more purpose. Start the plastic war, oh yeah. No plastic bags, stop throwing them away. No plastic bags, recycle them today. For everything that's breathing, the oxygen's receding. All this garbage hurts us all. Use cloth bags, wicker baskets, or paper help the planet. Start this plastic war, oh yeah. No plastic bags, stop throwing them away. No plastic bags, recycle them today. It can't be broken down to turn back into soil. It's not biodegradable. So it's gonna stick around a million years or more. Start the plastic war, oh yeah. So let's replace those flimsy plates that everybody hates, spoons and forks that cannot play their part. Back to eating off the leaf, we got to keep this planet clean. Separate the trash for the collector's cart. No plastic bags, stop throwing them away. No plastic bags, recycle them today. No plastic bags, stop throwing them away. No plastic bags, recycle them today.
I'm sure you've heard of climate change. And it's time for us to realize how much each one of us is adding to it in our actions. Time for positive action now. So join us in singing Carbon Footprint. All things done by mankind make an earthly imprint. This mark that we leave behind is called a carbon footprint. A carbon footprint. Let's make it go away, our carbon footprint. Together we'll erase our carbon footprint. All the trash that we make, all the fuel we're burning, all the water that we waste, it's only us we're hurting, only us we're hurting. Let's make it go away, our carbon footprint. Together we'll erase our carbon footprint.
We touched on the power of music in influencing people to start caring for their natural world. With care comes power in democracy, where people have the ability to influence decisions made at the state and federal levels. We talked about how music can be used as a way to subtly communicate important messages and how perception at the individual level carries its own power to emotionally drive people to action. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and I encourage you to continue these conversations with friends and family and discuss the role of art in influencing social and environmental change. Thanks for tuning in, and see you in the next one.